So, welcome back, everyone. Today I have Nick Kutze. Is that how you spell it, say your last name?
Yeah, it's close enough.
And I actually found you through Instagram, through one of my friends who's really interested in health. And he showed me about a company you started and your Instagram page. And it was really enlightening to hear what you had to say about stoicism, health, red light therapy, etc. But I first wanted to ask, what got you interested in the dimension of health, fitness, red light therapy, et cetera?
Yeah, so thanks for having me on. Really excited to chat with you and, you know, like-minded people. It's great to connect. So for me, I studied for 5 years and I studied a degree in biokinetics, which is like a form of physical therapy. And everything we were taught over that time period around health was diet and exercise. You know, it was eating a certain way, you know, cutting out inflammatory foods, whatever it was, and exercising 5 to 7 days a week. And that's kind of where it stopped. You know, it was literally, you know, those were the only two pillars we were really taught at university for health. And then as I got out of my, you know, studying years and working with clients, I started realizing that there was so much more to health. There were all these other pillars to health that people just weren't paying attention to. You know, so most of my clients already knew they needed to be eating less processed food. They knew they needed to move their body more throughout the week, where other aspects such as light, as we're probably going to talk about a bunch more, even philosophy, relationships, there's just so many other aspects to health. And that's what really opened my eyes to holistic health. And I started realizing I could have so much more of an impact with my clients the more areas that we focused on. You know, I found that if me and my clients were just focusing on diet and exercise, if you had a cheat meal, all of a sudden you just didn't feel good. You plummeted for like half a day at least. You just weren't feeling good. You know, if you didn't move your body enough, if you weren't exercising, then, you know, you would really feel the effects of that. And what I've realized is that because of all these other areas that were just being neglected, it was like these two areas, diet and exercise, were almost having to carry the load for everything else. And then with experience now, what I found is that, you know, when you focus on these other areas, be it your light environment, be it grounding yourself, you have more leeway. Obviously, you can, when everything is right, you feel really good, you know, sleeping really well and everything like that. But for me, it's just about now educating people and helping people to understand that there's more to health than just these two small pillars. And, you know, if you can focus on these other areas, A, you can feel a lot better, you can be a lot healthier. And it also makes life a little bit simpler just because you don't have to be so stringent with the two kind of mainstream aspects of health being diet and exercise.
Sure. Well, how would you define biokinetics? I want to talk about the other pillars, but for people who don't know, I actually haven't heard that word until like 30 minutes ago when I was looking it up.
Yeah. So it's actually it's equivalent of a keen kinesiologist, but it's the South African, it's what we taught in South Africa. So bio means life and then kinetics means movement. So it's basically improving your life through movement. So essentially it would be if someone had an injury, we would teach someone how to correct that, you know, the movement patterns so that they're not getting re-injured or so that they can heal it properly. But then also just in general day-to-day life, it's improving people's posture. It's improving the way that they move their body so that they function more optimally. So using movement as a way to improve your health.
Sure. And what brought you down that road to begin with, like biokinetics?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a good 10 years ago. I would say I always had a very keen interest in sports, a lot of football in my background, a lot of surfing. And I always just found the human body very fascinating, you know, that you could move it a certain way and that you can improve it. So I think it was, yeah, my love for movement and my love for improving human performance that drove me down that way.
Sure. Okay. Let's talk about those pillars. You said you were learning a lot about, you know, exercise and diet, but those are only two of the pillars. What other pillars are there? And do you think any of the pillars hold a certain weight over the others? Like, is there a hierarchy of what pillars are more important?
So I think, you know, what's almost more important than whether one pillar is bigger than the other, because that's always tricky to measure. It's more, what are people paying attention to? So let's say diet, for example. There's many variations of diet. There's the paleo diet, there's ketogenic, there's, you know, all these different variations, but most of them, you're getting at about 80 to 90% right. All of these different variations of diet, they're cutting out processed sugars, they're cutting out inflammatory oils. Whereas something like your light environment and your circadian rhythm, like that kind of field, people are maybe paying 10% attention to that. Most people don't even think about it. So I think it's for most people, 95% of people who listen to this, their light environment is probably the most important thing for them to focus on right now because they have so much to work with. You know, if you're living indoors and you're not considering the type of light you're being exposed to at night, you know, so if you're getting exposed to artificial light at night, and if you're not getting yourself outside and getting enough natural light, you are leaving so much happiness, energy, you know, performance off the table because there's just, you know, such a big area that you're not focusing on. And with small kind of changes, you can have drastic improvements because there's just that massive area to work with. So I would say light environment is probably the biggest one. Because it's a source of energy for us. It's also something that's going to improve your sleep quality. As soon as you start correcting your circadian rhythm through your light environment, you start sleeping better at night, you stop feeling sleepy during the day. So I would say, yeah, your light environment and your circadian rhythm are probably the biggest pillar that people should be focusing on if they're not already doing it, as most people aren't, because that's where you have the most bang for your buck, some really small changes, and you can have drastic improvements in your health and performance.
Sure. So what would you recommend to someone who, how would they tailor their room or how would they tailor their environment? You said to get outside, you know, what about before bed? How about you highlight your morning and evening routines and how your environment is set up in each of those?
Perfect. So yeah, I think the number one thing you should always be trying to do is reconnect with nature. So first step, when you wake up in the morning, one of the most important things you could do is get yourself outside. Your light environment is basically what triggers or kickstarts your circadian rhythm. You know, up until recently, our light environment was a very good source to tell our bodies what time of day it was. So before we had artificial lighting, seeing any form of like bright light was only natural to happen during daytime. So our bodies are basically entrained that when bright light enters through our eyes, it must be daytime. Therefore, we start all these chemical processes to wake us up. So the first thing in the morning that I do and that you should be doing is getting outside and getting some natural light entering through your eyes. A lot of people skip this and they go, you know, straight to the office or they're working indoors. And unfortunately, this type of light is nowhere near as bright as outdoor light. So getting yourself outside is a great way to kickstart your circadian rhythm. It wakes you up, makes you feel alert. And because it gets this rhythm going, it's also going to help with things like your sleep quality and digestion, because now your entire rhythm is going better. In the morning, obviously a bit of movement is also a great way, but sticking with light environment, you know, the more time you can spend outside, the more skin you can get exposed in the early hours of the day. Obviously you don't want to burn yourself. That's just going to really help with your rhythm. And then, you know, that's the one side of the equation. So now you're adding more light to your body and to your physiology. On the other side, and this is a really, really big one, artificial light at night is so bad for your sleep quality and for your performance because it is now tricking your brain into thinking that it is again daytime. So what should happen in the evenings is in the presence of darkness, your body starts releasing more melatonin, your sleep quality, your sleep hormone. And unfortunately, because of artificial devices, you know, we've got our cell phones, our laptops, overhead lighting, we're not able to basically replicate that day signal with artificial sources at the wrong time of day. So that's where most people struggle with their sleep is because they're getting exposed to this light at night. So in the evenings, simple things, you know, you could try and switch your lighting to more orange or incandescent bulbs. You get different filters for your, you know, devices, laptop screens, blue blockers. I've got a pair of blue blockers there upstairs, but like orange tinted glasses are really good at preventing blue light from entering your eyes. And then if you do have like a red light therapy device, then that's something you could also use in the evening just to simulate more of a nighttime light setting.
Wow, that's interesting. You know, we live in such an environment where you're on your screens most of your day, you're inside a lot of your day, at least I am, going to school, working, etc. And these are things I didn't really realize until pretty recently. Like over the past week or two, I've been getting up before my school, going outside and standing outside without much clothes on, just pretty much just shorts and just taking in the sun. And I feel like at night I am able to fall asleep. Like I feel that tiredness, and it's this tiredness that I hadn't felt in a long time. Normally it's kind of it's a chore to go to bed, and it's like, oh, I don't feel like going to bed because I probably have been surrounded by all this blue and artificial light. And Yeah, that's so interesting. And
so there's a study. The title was, I think it's bright light exposure in the morning leads to better sleep quality in males. I think that's the title. It'll pop up if you searched it in Google. But essentially what they did is they exposed people to bright light in the mornings. And what they found is that 12 hours later, when it's time to go to bed, they actually have a better quality of sleep. And it's because that first light in the morning, that's what kickstarts and gets your circadian rhythm going. And you don't have to be outside the entire morning, but simply 15 minutes, exactly as you did, trying to get a bit more skin exposure, but most importantly, letting some of that light enter through your eyes, just gets that rhythm going. And it will lead to, as you said, better sleep quality the following evening. But many other aspects, your circadian rhythm is also responsible for your digestion. So you should be digesting foods during the daytime and not at nighttime, obviously. And when you get that bright light in the morning, it's also super effective at improving the digestion when you do eat food, at the right times of day.
Sure. And when would you recommend eating? Like, do you go through intermittent fasting, or what are your strategies?
So that's a good question, because there's a lot of theories around this, and 80% of the job is done by just making sure that you eat during the day. Some people will argue you should eat your biggest meals in the mornings. Some people say you should fast in the mornings. The difference between those two is not a lot, and I think that's why that's still up for debate. But the most important is that you're not eating after sunset and keeping the food during daytime hours.
Sure. Walk me through the process of starting this company. Did you feel a need, like, you recognized the utility of red light, but you realized your room didn't have enough of it? Like, walk me through how you started it, that whole process. I'm very curious.
Yeah. So when I first started, I was still working with my clients at the time. And as I said, we were already starting to focus on light environment. And the idea was, the more time you can spend outside getting natural light sun exposure, the more your health's going to improve. And I definitely saw that with myself and my clients. But the problem is, most of us don't have the luxury of being able to spend hours outside in the morning. And I think that's where, that's what red light therapy does, is it bridges that gap between, we can't go back and live exactly as our ancestors did. As much as we want to, we are living modern lives. I still have to work inside during the day. You said as well, you're still got school or whatever. There are still times where you are unfortunately inside. So red light therapy is now a way where you can supplement with red and infrared light, which is the most dominant type of light from sunlight, in a much shorter time period. So with the devices that we've created, essentially in 5 to 8 minutes, you can supplement with enough red and infrared light to see you through the day. And that's going to still give you the benefits of, improving your light environment. I will never say that we can replace sunlight, because there are other factors, like you need UV light to make vitamin D. And that still is important. However, in bridging that gap between modern society and how our ancestors lived, red light therapy is an extremely effective tool at bridging that. And that's why, you can go into any scientific database and type in red light therapy and, its benefits. You'll see there's very drastic improvements in the literature. And the reason that we see such big improvements is comes down to the fact that there is just this huge disconnect between how we're living now versus how our ancestors lived. And as soon as you bridge that gap, you see massive improvements in sleep quality. People have faster muscle recovery. The energy levels are better. Inflammation is drastically decreased with red light therapy. So actually, I shared a study this morning with our email newsletter, and it was about the effects of red light therapy on COVID. And there's been basically a bit of a struggle with the type of inflammation that comes from COVID, because it's been mediated through a different pathway. And with infrared light, they've actually shown now that they're able to reduce this inflammation from COVID by 80% in cell structures. And that's like people aiming it directly at their chests and their backs. So it's really important that I think you have that kind of base understanding of how red light therapy works. You're getting yourself a little bit closer to nature, because when you go into the scientific research and you see the benefits, they really are drastic. And there are these really big levels of improvement. But again, it just comes down to that, bridging that gap between a pillar of health that people aren't paying enough attention to. So there is this massive room for improvement.
Interesting. I actually go to school for this degree called industrial engineering, kind of how to produce products, how to design businesses, et cetera. I'm very curious how you went about creating that business. Who did you have to contact? You know, who is your manufacturer? Like, was this all a new experience for you? Like, I bet this was a huge learning lesson.
So this is actually there's a bit of an untold story here. My first company was not red light therapy glasses. I mean, red light therapy devices. My first product was blue blocker glasses, the ones I mentioned earlier. I don't have that company anymore, but I first got interested in that, and that was really simple. I just found a manufacturer for frames, and then I just had to get a specific tint for the glasses. That was a simple design. After that, just through contacts of working with that factory, I was able to find, you know, another LED factory, and we're able to design our own product. The tricky part came in. There's a very big gap between the type of devices that you find, you know, like the medical grade ones, and the ones that are used that are sold for at-home devices. So if you're using really cheap LED lights, the power doesn't tend to be anywhere near what you get in the study. So the trickiest part was for us was finding high grade LED lights. And then from there, yeah, just us essentially going through the whole design process, getting an engineer and everyone to put everything together. And then, yeah, trying to share it with as many people as we can. I was very fortunate when I started my company. I had done a couple of courses overseas through biokinetics. I'd studied with other people. So mitochondria, essentially, I knew a couple of people who were health leaders because they were all in the same field as me. And from that, everyone else, you know, was able to educate people about the product. So we first started out getting our products into a whole bunch of different gyms and rehab facilities. And then from there, because we were essentially our devices are designed for at-home usage, the different physiotherapists, biokineticists all across the world would use it with their clients, and then they would be able to get the product sent to them, and then everyone was doing this essentially at home.
That's an amazing story. Congratulations. Yeah. That's awesome.
Thank you.
And so when would you recommend someone use that red light therapy? Is it, you said, in the morning, or is it at night too? Is it both? Like in the middle of the day too?
So I think I mentioned it earlier, but your circadian rhythm is primarily set by your light environment. And that is true, but there's some nuances to that. So it actually has a lot to do with the color of the light. So our body pays attention to the shorter wavelengths of light, such as blue and green light, because you would get exposed to that type of light from sunlight. When it comes to red and infrared light, in nature, we would not only be exposed to that type of light during the day, because at nighttime, you could still be exposed to a fire. You know, often we would sleep next to a fire. That is a great source of red and infrared light. Infrared light is also actually heat. So if you were next to another human body, or even if, you know, you slept on the floor that had been heated up by the sun, that floor would be giving off infrared light at nighttime. So we basically developed a sleep immunity to red and infrared light. It doesn't have that much impact on our circadian rhythm. It's extremely important for us. It helps to improve the energy production in your mitochondria, but it's not that important for setting your rhythm. So essentially, you can do it at any time of day. With that said, what we have found with our customers is that the most important thing to get results is that you're consistent with your sessions. So if you can do your sessions every single day, that's going to lead to the best results. And for most people, that's part of their morning routine. Simply waking up in the morning, you know, flicking on a switch and standing in front of your device for 5 minutes, A, it's going to help you to start your day. It makes you feel a lot more awake and alert. But B, if, you know, when you have a really solid morning routine, it means you're going to be consistent with that. So it's not extremely important in terms of, you know, setting a rhythm or anything like that, but it is important if you want to be consistent to find a time that works for you. And for most people, that is in the morning time.
Gotcha. And does your device actually emit heat, that infrared, or is it mainly just red light?
Yeah, so the near infrared is a lower part of the entire infrared spectrum, so it doesn't emit heat. You might have heard of infrared saunas. Those will use mid and far infrared, and those do heat up your tissues. But with red light therapy, what you're trying to do, we've basically pushed the boundary as far as we can with red and near infrared to the point where it doesn't produce heat, but that you can still get that level of penetration. So we can make the lights extremely powerful. You don't have to worry about burning yourself, and you can hold it close up against you. And then you can get, you know, really deep penetration up to like 15 centimeters. Like I mentioned to you earlier, those effects that they saw with the COVID, If you're targeting the front and the back of your body, you will literally penetrate it through to your lungs and get that level of penetration because it's not producing any heat. We can really crank up the power on those lights, and then you get that depth of penetration.
That's so interesting. And how'd you come up with the name Mitochondria?
So it's a play on words, but the way that red light therapy works is by increasing the energy production in your mitochondria. So it's a play on words between mitochondria and my. So you're kind of, you know, you're taking back control or looking after your mitochondria.
I love it. That's awesome. And sure. Besides red light, I guess we already kind of talked. What else would you recommend? You said diet, exercise, sleep, red light. Is there anything else you can think of that's super important for a healthy life or even a meaningful life?
I think one of the biggest things, and this is definitely for me in the last 12 months, is to find your purpose. You know, and this is outside of, I think it's just one of those, again, similar to the light environment, people don't think about it. I think if you have a purpose in life, it can get you through so many other hardships and times. And you can be the healthiest person. You can be eating right. You can be exercising. You can be doing red light therapy. But if you don't have a purpose and a reason that gets you up every day and motivates you to do these things, you're not going to get that far. So I think finding your purpose and knowing what you're trying to build or achieve in your life is a pillar of health. It is an aspect of health that should be considered and definitely worked on and improved.
Sure. And so what would you say your purpose is on this earth?
Oh, good question. So for me, I think the first one is helping more people understand health. You know, obviously educating about the other aspects of health. But then, yeah, for me, I think I always want to have a sense of fulfillment that I am showing up the best version of myself. I don't want to get to the end of my life and go, I could have done better if I was, you know, if I exercised more, if I worked on something in my life. So it's always pushing that level of my own performance and, you know, being able to put my head on the pillow at the end of the night and know I gave it my best that day and I didn't mess around that much.
Sure.
Yeah.
So I guess transitioning also on your Instagram page, you talk quite a lot about Stoic philosophy. And I was curious where that inspiration came from. When did you first discover the Stoics? And, you know, did you grow up with a specific philosophy or religion, or did it transition?
So I grew up a Christian, and that was just in primary school because I went to a Christian primary school. But I think I only discovered the Stoic philosophy about 2 years ago, and it's through a guy called Ryan Holiday, and he's written a couple of books on it. And yeah, it just really appealed to me. I think, you know, a lot of people, especially this year, and I'd say even the last 2 years, are going through a lot of hard times. And the Stoic philosophy is really good at helping you to understand, you know, that everything is part of the journey, understanding the goods, the bad parts, you know, there's many aspects to the Stoic philosophy. But I think the main takeaway from it all is understanding that the good and the hard times are all part of your journey. And for me, I would say over the last 2 years, it's been essential to adapting to the way that society and everything is going at the moment.
Sure. Do you have a favorite philosopher from Stoicism that you enjoy?
It's Marcus. So I've got a tattoo over there. That's Marcus Aurelius. I love a lot of his quotes, but there's definitely a few, but I would say Marcus Aurelius is probably the top one.
Sure. What are some of the quotes? Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, there's a few quotes, but I think what the most amazing thing about him is, I mean, he was an emperor. He could have had access to hundreds of women. He could have completely indulged in pleasure and letting himself, you know, succumb to those things, but he didn't. He was able to understand the simplicities of life and, you know, that chasing pleasure is not what leads to a fulfilled and happy life. And he almost was able to live in a very simplistic way, even though he had access to all, you know, of these pleasures of, you know, he could be with 100 women every night. He could have, you know, whatever kind of luxury he wanted. He chose not to. So I'd say that's why he's probably, I would say, the favorite in there. My favorite quote of his is, the quality of your thoughts, the quality of your life depends on, I'm paraphrasing this, the quality of life, your quality of life depends on the quality of your thoughts. It's the one that's on my Instagram handle, so I should actually know it. But I think that's the key takeaway, again, from the philosophy is that your external environment is separate to, it doesn't dictate how you feel. So you, the last 2 years, obviously everyone's been through a lot with COVID and everything, but you still are in control. Your own thoughts are in control of dictating the quality of your life.
And that's inspirational. I also saw a post that you did where you had a tattoo that says Amor Fati. And yeah, you had a great explanation of what that was. And do you mind explaining that again?
Yeah, so Amor Fati means lover of fate. And it was kind of what I mentioned earlier, where it's understanding that in life, it's not all sunshine and rainbows. You know, it's not always going to be a high. Things aren't always going to go well. Every single one of us will face hard times. It's non-negotiable. Your life will face hard times. It could be everything could be going right, and then all of a sudden a family member dies, or your business goes bankrupt because of some unforeseen circumstances. And when these things happen, it's extremely important to understand that that is part of your journey. So no one else is going to live the life that you're going to live, and your life is never going to just be happiness. There are going to be these ups and downs, but there's always something that you can take from the low points. The low points will always teach you some kind of lesson. So it's not, as the Stoics say, it's not necessarily about absolutely loving every single aspect of it. You aim for it, but it's seeing everything as either good or at least necessary within your life, whatever that aspect is. And that's definitely, I think, a very important aspect of the philosophy to take on.
It's amazing. Yeah, because I grew up a Christian as well, but you know, I see some pros and cons of being a Christian, and I feel like Stoicism actually heavily influenced Christianity, because the Greek traditions preceded the Christian traditions, and I see so many parallels within. And I actually hadn't even heard of Stoicism until like a year ago, and I just, this influx of all of this interesting philosophy that makes a lot of sense and seems to be very true came into my brain, and I was like, wow, this, I love this. And so I like always hearing people's perspectives on religion, philosophy, et cetera. But yeah. And what books would you recommend? I are you a reader at all?
Yeah, so that's, I think we mentioned earlier before that we started the podcast, the one that you got in the back there, The 12 Rules of Life, Jordan Peterson. That's literally next to my bed right now. That's a really good one. And if someone wants to get into Stoicism, I would recommend looking at Ryan Holiday's got a book, The Obstacle is the Way. That's a really, really good one. A very, very simple book, and this is really nice to have next to your bed, is the Marcus Aurelius Meditations. And it is basically what Marcus Aurelius wrote into his diary, and they have broken it down where there's a lesson each day. So you've got half a page to read every morning. And that is such a great way, especially if you're someone who meditates in the morning, literally read whatever the date is, you know, they'll have it, it's all listed per date, read that day's meditation, and then just take that principle of Stoicism and apply it to your life on that day. That would definitely be a great one to go with. Another one you've got behind there is Beyond Order. I can see on your bookshelf over there. That's also a great book by Jordan Peterson. Those three are probably great ones to start with.
Sure. That's amazing. So yeah, I actually saw a post of yours on Instagram as well that said, fuck shampoo in some sense. And I my friend showed it to me, the same friend who showed me your page. And he's like, what do you think of this? And I'm like, I really have no idea. But honestly, over the past like 9 days, I haven't used any shampoo or conditioner, and I've kind of tested it out. I kind of have some long hair, and I haven't really noticed that much of a difference. It maybe is slightly more greasy, but really not too bad. Yeah. But, you know, tell me about that and, you know, why you said that and what your experience has been.
So that's so interesting, because it's the one topic that I never talk about. I was putting out a whole bunch of content on TikTok. I was talking about all different aspects of health, light environment, Stoicism, all these things. And then I made one video where I spoke about the fact that I don't use shampoo or products on my hair. And I stopped using it must be about 6 years ago, just because my hair, I was getting a bit of hair loss, and I think it was from the chemicals in the shampoo. It just so happens that I speak about the topic once, and that video went extremely viral. So at this point, I think it's over 13 million views. It was featured on Lad Bible, featured on a couple of news stations across the world. It went absolutely viral. I mean, if I go in public now, I have people walk up to me and they'll be like, oh my gosh, you're the guy who doesn't wash his hair. It's like, I made one video on this topic and now that's what everyone has chosen to know it for. But again, it's coming down to that principle of reconnecting with nature. Our ancestors never used the shampoos we use today. They may have cleaned their hair, but traditional shampoos were only, they only really started being used in the 1930s. So it's not even 100 years ago. And what you find is when you stop using these products, as you currently are experiencing or kind of would experience in the transition phase, your hair does get a little bit more oily for about a month. And then after that, what happens is your hair learns to look after itself. It doesn't produce as much oil. You're not stripping it. And a lot of people find that their hair gets a lot healthier. I stopped having hair loss. I was getting, you know, a whole bunch of hair falling out. And since the original video, there's literally been, I would say at this point, thousands of people who have joined this no shampoo movement and have seen improvements in their health, whether that's, you know, just a healthier hair look, more fuller hair, and not as much shedding. A lot of men have also reported that their hair loss has stopped. Obviously, there's many aspects to hair loss, and it can be genetic, it can be all these other things. But there is a portion of men who are experiencing hair loss, not because of genetic reasons, but because it is, and I say men, it's also actually applies to females, but they might be experiencing their hair loss because of some of the harsh chemicals that are in traditional shampoos and conditioners.
So interesting, because, you know, my girlfriend and her sister, she's a hairdresser, and my girlfriend always, you know, mentions her opinion, and she's like, you know, you really should wash your hair 3 times a week at least. And I'm like, maybe we're just biased because of the time frame we grew up in. Like you said, these substances haven't really been around for that long. But on the other hand, maybe they are, you know, maybe they could improve our life. But in your experience, at least, and in these other 1,000 people's experiences, it seems to be that removing that from your life actually makes it better. How long have you been doing this?
The hair thing is about 6 or 7 years now. And I made the original video, it was about 6 years. Because when I first, I was still studying. So it's a good 6 or 7 years ago. But it's interesting, you know, what you said now about we've been conditioned to think that we need to be doing these things. And I don't know if you, have you ever watched the movie The Matrix?
I've seen bits and pieces. I kind of understand the idea, but not the full thing.
Yeah, so it's almost like that where, you know, we're going through this in the movie The Matrix. Everyone is living a certain way, and Neo, the main character, realizes that there's more to this reality, and there's different interpretations of how you could apply that to real life. But this is one of those cases where it's like everyone has been conditioned to believe something, and because so many people believe it, we almost just take that as the truth. And now slowly people are waking up, and you know, in the movie The Matrix, people wake up to the fact that there is another reality, and experiencing something like this, thousands of people are now realizing, oh my gosh, I've been washing my hair with these products that have been damaging my hair. And if I just stop using them, welcome to another reality. Now I can have super healthy hair, and all I have to do is rinse it with water.
That's awesome. Yeah. And save some money in the process.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't know if you're a person who's delved into the psychedelics, but I feel like that helps you kind of recognize that there are other ways you can view reality and other realities. I'm not certain what your opinion is of those, but I was just curious.
I completely agree with you. So I had the exact same realization when I started looking into some of those, is that there is more to this reality. I think that's the first thing. Mine was with psilocybin. I immediately, first trip, I noticed, I thought I knew everything. And it's a big wake-up call and a shock to the system when you go, okay, there's more to this reality that I'm not seeing, because psilocybin is not, you know, yes, there are psychedelic and there's altering kind of effects, but you still feel, at least for myself, I still feel quite in control, and you get to see everything around you in a way that you just weren't seeing before. And I completely agree with you. That same mindset, that same view on things, is that there is more to reality than we previously thought.
Definitely. What would you say your biggest takeaways are from that trip or your trips in general?
So there's been a few. I would say that the biggest one is going to, I'm going to stick with the one on the reality, that there's more to reality. I would say, you know, because after after my first trip, I was open to a lot more ideas, things like manifestation, you know, being able to create your own reality and synchronicities and all these kind of things that I previously would have called very woo-woo. I would never have thought, oh, you know, you can attract things into your life based on your thoughts. But after, you know, experimenting with some psychedelics, it's made me more open to these other aspects of health. You know, it doesn't mean I necessarily believe them straight off the bat, but I'm more open to testing other things. And I think it sounds like similar to you. You hear about someone not washing their hair with shampoo and conditioner. It doesn't mean you go, okay, that definitely works. But you go, I've been wrong in the past before about, you know, I've been so certain that I knew everything. I've been wrong in the past. So let me be open to trying this and then self-experimenting to find out.
Dang, yeah, that's well said. That openness, you don't want to be too open, like you said, but, you know, having that line between, you know, I'm open enough to at least test the hypothesis and, you know, listen, you know, instead of writing someone off as this guy's crazy, he doesn't use shampoo, or, you know, this guy, you know, he's taking psychedelics, is he crazy? You know, I feel like you're right. It opens up that mind just enough that you're able to learn so much more, in my opinion. Like, without that, I feel like closed-minded people in regards to religion, philosophy, life are the people who kind of stay stagnant in what they think and who they are. And those are the kind of people I don't like to associate with as much as the people who are willing to explore, willing to be open, but also, you know, skeptical at the same time, but willing to at least start that journey. So, yeah.
Absolutely. There's an expression, I don't know who said it, but it says, the day that you think you know everything is the day you stop learning.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
And I guess what brought you to Indonesia? You started in South Africa. What brought you there?
Yeah, so I've lived in South Africa for 28 years, and it was meant to be a holiday. So I came here for a month. I was escaping the winter in South Africa, so trying to get a bit more sun. I find myself a lot more productive, a lot more happy when it's, you know, there's longer days, there's more sunlight to get out into. I also surf, so that took me there. And then, yeah, I was there for a month. Well, here for a month. I went back to South Africa, and I realized I wanted to come back here. So just moved back to Bali now. We're renting a nice, you know, big villa where we're staying now. I've set up my company and everything so that I can work nomadically. And I would say, yeah, the lifestyle is really good here. It's really affordable to live here. The cost of living is really, really good. But the weather is also really good. People are super friendly. I can surf. It ticks all the boxes for me.
That's awesome. Yeah, I should definitely check that place out sometime. Who do you live with? Is it your coworkers, the people who help with your company, your friends?
So a good friend of mine who's also in the digital nomad space, he's a YouTuber. And then another guy that we met. Yeah, so it's just three of us at this place.
That's awesome. And yeah. Are you also a coach at the same time, like a fitness or a health coach? You said you had clients before. Were you talking about your mitochondria clients or something else?
No, so that was in person. That was when I was working rehabilitation and I was doing in person. I have done consulting in the past with health stuff. It's not what I'm currently doing just because my time has been too taken up building up mitochondria on that side. I may look at it again, but I would like to do it from a place of not needing the money, because what I find is the people who need this the most is often the people who don't necessarily have the money to afford the sessions. So I think it'd be better if, you know, more of my business is completely automated and I could not have to worry about charging someone too much for my time and rather focus on just making the biggest impact with people I get.
It's interesting. And what would you say to someone who has a dream or has an entrepreneurial idea like you had? What would you say to that person today if they are debating starting it or not? Or what would you say to them?
I would say that the fear of regret should outweigh your fear of failure. So every single time you take a chance and you think about starting a new business or something like that, it's that fear of failure. What will people think if I don't do it? Or what will I think if it fails? However, I often put myself in a situation and mentally I will go to a place where I'm 70 years old and I think, what if I get to that age and I look back and go, I should have done that. You know, you might get to the end of your life and go, I worked my entire life a 9-to-5 job. I would, you know, never had much finances. Where if you pull the trigger, the worst that can happen is that you can fail, and you can learn from it and you can try again. So don't let your fear of failure be bigger than the fear of regret. Lean into that, and then that is a great motivator to get you started.
I love that. Yeah, I wrote that down. Man, that's really good. And what would you say your goals are for the next 2 years-ish, 1 to 2 years? What are your goals? What do you want to do so that you don't regret when you're 70?
That's a good question. So at the moment, my company is scaling into different countries. So that's in terms of business sense, we're scaling Mycondria into Europe and into other areas where we can have, we do currently supply people around there, but I want to have more warehousing set up. So on a business sense, that's probably what I want to grow. Right now, I'm in a very fun stage of my life. You know, I'm able to live in Bali, Indonesia, and, you know, I can live a really good lifestyle here. Lots of surfing. You know, there's a good social scene. But the next 5 years, I'm probably going to want to find a partner and look at having kids. That's probably the next aspect to life. I do think having children is a very fulfilling thing, and similar situation. This is actually what I mentioned earlier, you know, where I go into my thinking about being a 70-year-old or 80 or whatever old I am when, you know, I'm in the old age category. I don't want to sit there while all my friends have got grandchildren running around and I'm sitting there going, you know, it's me and maybe just my partner. I would rather have, you know, just to be able to see that lineage and something that you've created at the end of my life. So I think kids is probably on the cards in the next 5 or so years.
That's amazing. I love to hear that. Yeah, I always hear Peterson in the back of my mind. What are you going to do when you're 60 and alone? It's like, yeah, that's a great point. I can't argue it, period.
Exactly. And it's an interesting thing to do as a human, you know, to lean into fear sometimes, to lean into regret or the fear of regret. But ultimately, if you're using it for a positive cause, I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, that truly is. Well, I really like having you on. I think that's a good place to end. I appreciate you. I think we had a great discussion.
Absolutely fine. Thanks for having me on the call, and thanks for, you know, making the time on your side as well. It's obviously been tricky with the time zones.
No worries.
But really appreciate you, yeah, having me on and then being able to speak to a different audience.
Yeah, of course. And I'll put the links in the description regarding the Mycondria and your page in general. And yeah.
Perfect. Brilliant. Thank you.